If your business needs a new application, then developers will have to write code, a lot of code. If an application needs to be modernized, then you'll need time, resources, and caffeine. If that sounds daunting, then you need Watson X Code Assistant, AI designed to multiply developer productivity so you can generate code quickly. Let's create a more modern foundation for business with Watson X Code Assistant. Learn more at ibm.com/codeassistant. IBM, let's create.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casuals and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
Hey, everyone. This is Jody Sweetin from the podcast How Rude, Tanneritos. I've been needing a quick getaway with my family, and the 2024 Hyundai Santa Fe is the perfect vehicle to take us there. It has standard third row seating, so I'm able to pack my entire family, plus pets, in the car while also having enough room for our camping essentials. Available H-Track all-wheel drive will get us through any dirt trails, and available dual wireless charging pads will ensure we never have to worry about getting stuck with a dead phone in the middle of nowhere. Visit HyundaiUSA.com. or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Welcome to Strictly Business, Variety's weekly podcast featuring conversations with industry leaders about the business of media and entertainment. I'm Cynthia Littleton, co-editor-in-chief of Variety. Today, my guest is Susan Brandt, President and CEO of Dr. Seuss Enterprises. Dr. Seuss is truly sui generis. The 60 or so books left behind by author and illustrator Theodore Geisel are incredible and enduring work. From The Cat in the Hat to The Lorax to Oh, the Places You'll Go, it's uniquely resonant across generations. As Brandt puts it so well, Dr. Seuss really represents childhood for so many. As a writer and a reader, I marvel at how his books grow with you. At every age, you learn something new. Brandt has the responsibility of managing the archive and keeping the world of Seuss fresh. Based in San Diego, Dr. Seuss Enterprises is the for-profit company that is owned by a foundation. The proceeds from Seuss Enterprises' work go to support children and family-focused charities in the San Diego area. In our conversation, Brandt explains how the company is thinking about the content marketplace at this time of incredible demand for established titles. She also shares the sweet story of how following her heart by moving to San Diego led her to 24 years and counting with the brand she loves. That's all coming up on today's episode of Strictly Business.
When it comes to ensuring your company has top-notch security practices, things can get complicated fast. Vanta automates compliance for ISO 27001 SOC 2 and more, saving you time and money. Unify your security program management and streamline security reviews with AI-powered security questionnaires. Over 7,000 global companies like Atlassian, FlowHealth, and Quora use Vanta to build trust and improve security in real time. Access Vanta's free suite of resources to scale your governance, risk, and compliance program at vanta.com/special. That's vanta.com/special.
AI might be the most important new computer technology ever. It's storming every industry, and literally billions of dollars are being invested. So buckle up. The problem is that AI needs a lot of speed and processing power. So how do you compete without costs spiraling out of control? It's time to upgrade to the next generation of the cloud. Oracle Cloud Infrastructure, or OCI. OCI is a single platform for your infrastructure, database, application development, and AI needs. OCI has 4 to 8 times the bandwidth of other clouds, offers one consistent price instead of variable regional pricing, and of course, nobody does data better than Oracle. So now you can train your AI models at twice the speed and less than half the cost of other clouds. If you want to do more and spend less like Uber, 8x8, and Databricks Mosaic, take a free test drive of OCI at oracle.com/strategic. That's oracle.com/strategic.
oracle.com/strategic. Susan Brand, President and CEO of Dr. Seuss Enterprises. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Thanks for having me.
You are the steward of all things Dr. Seuss that manage the archive and all of the intellectual property left behind by the amazing, amazing author, illustrator, Theodore Geisel, mm-hmm. who better known to millions as Dr. Seuss. So I would like to start at the 30,000 foot view. Mm-hmm. You are in such a unique position with the steward of this incredible, incredible marquee content. At this moment in time, when there is so much demand for content, so many different avenues to take truly beloved IP, how are you looking at this landscape? How are you managing things? And all of the, I have no doubt the incoming calls are tremendous.
Mm-hmm. Well, first of all, we do take stewardship very seriously, Dr. Seuss. You know, we're blessed with this beautiful IP, and we take that responsibility quite seriously, myself and everyone else on the team. We also take really seriously the relationship that our fans have with this property. We're so unique. You alluded to it. Generations have grown up with Dr. Seuss. It really represents childhood. It represents that bond between parents and children. And as such, you have to be very careful with what you do with this content. Then we also watch and we say, where are the places that we can further that relationship? Where can we take this beautiful IP and where can we deliver it to where our fans are in fact consuming it? And that's why you see us actively involved in things like streaming, films, podcasts, stage shows, you know, even cruise ships. If there's an opportunity to reach our audience and deepen that relationship, that bond, that's what we're looking at.
When you are working with content that is beyond this, you know, mm-hmm. the original canon of what Dr. Seuss left, what is the gut check? How do you determine mm-hmm. the quality control that this is worthy of the Seuss brand?
I think you have to pick your partners really carefully. In any venture, whether obviously, you know, you're making t-shirts or a cruise ship partnership, you've got to make sure, and we try to make sure it's always best in class. And that's where meeting that team, seeing what they've done before, having discussions about how they might utilize the property, that's where your gut comes in. And then I think you trust, you know, those partners, you really do. There is a sense of letting go. If you find the experts and your gut tells you that's the right team, you know, we understand the DNA of it. They understand the expertise of their genre. You have to let them go. And so there is a bit of a leap of faith that says, I'm going to give you this property and you're going to caretake it. There's checkpoints for sure. You know, all the way, I'm very actively involved in the major entertainment deals. So I'll work with producing parties, the creative teams on films, on television, even the cruise ships. But all the way down, you know, every member of the team is touching those products. So so I think it does, though, go back to finding those right team members, those partners, and really partnering with them.
Mm-hmm. But it does sound like you said you're checking in every step of the way, you know, every iteration, because as you know, it takes, you know, it doesn't take long to tarnish even a gold-plated brand with the wrong.
We are notoriously tough, I understand, in our approval rights, where that is when people enter into an agreement with us, that is something that I have been told is like, wow, no one gets these approval rights. We do. Mm-hmm. We do. And we also have a proven track record of not holding up productions. That's what people are nervous about. And I get it. You know, production is expensive. And when you have to go back to the rights holder, you know, the potential for loss of dollars, we get it. And we've been able to do that so successfully in the past that people say, okay. And that's what I mean about being a partner. You have to know when you can jump in, what's important to change. And you know, what's important for that brand, right? What's important for Seuss? So where will I push back and where will I not? It's strict rights that we have.
Is it, of course, we know that the industry is, you know, the industry is in the middle of a huge content boom and a huge, you know, moment of globalization where we are really seeing for the first time borders really kind of being erased by gigantic platforms. So there's a lot going on in the marketplace, but is there Is that the reason why we're seeing a lot of SUS initiatives in media right now? Or is it just kind of coincidental that things have been brewing for a while and this is when a lot of them have come to fruition?
Well, things have been brewing. It takes a while to do these deals for sure. But the opportunity for where we can place this content is exploding, right? And so there's all these opportunities for us to develop new content. Deals do take time, and sometimes they all tend to happen around the same time. A lot of the news that you're hearing, particularly our preschool slate, our Warner Brothers, since we have three films with Warner Brothers, actually, those obviously had been in the works for a while. They just happened to all get tied up at the same time. But a lot of this is being generated by the opportunity to create content for different delivery, like again, podcasting. That's, we are not yet in that space. We are having discussions. It's really exciting. That didn't really exist pre-pandemic. There really wasn't a huge, there was some, yes, but it wasn't as prolific as
not
it is.
Nearly as much attention for sure. Overall.
Yeah. So we listen, you know, you pay attention, you listen. You just have to see what's moving and what's appropriate. We're not always also concerned with being a first mover. Sometimes we do. But oftentimes we wait and we say, is this appropriate for this brand and our families? Is this space where we want to be? You may not always see us move first. Sometimes we do, but oftentimes we're watching and saying, is this the right move for us? Mm-hmm. But yeah, sometimes the deals just kind of all culminate around the same time.
Mm-hmm. Is the SUS brand, at first blush, you think of the SUS brand as fairly, you know, 2 to 5, 2 to 6 year old age range, but is it broader than that?
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, of course it has the love of parent, you know, it has that multi-generational, that's invaluable, but in terms of the core readership, is it that young or is it broader?
Well, I mean, fundamentally, you know, the company was built on books, you know, 83 years ago, you know, we have 45 books. We have absolutely grown into a global entertainment company. But the core, those books, you know, we speak to the preschoolers, we speak to the early readers, absolutely. But we've been able to take those books and parlay and build beyond that. We certainly have an audience in teens. That's why we can do collaborations like with Supreme or Kylie Jenner. That's why our films, we've had 5 films and collectively be $1.5 billion at the box office. You can't do that with a preschool-only property, right?
Right.
So we've had this. And I think part of the reason we can do that is, I'd say we're really smart, but I think Ted Geisel was really smarter. You know, his stories have such universal messages and themes that you really kind of never outgrow that, right? You never outgrow a concern for the environment or an understanding of why diversity is so important. And because those themes you never outgrow, we can take that and we can take those characters and remain relevant as people age. So we've got, you know, teens, we've got young adults, we've got parents, we've got teachers, we've got grandparents, and we can talk to each one of them, done right and appropriately.
You also recently announced on the book front, really fascinating initiative on the book front that also kind of raises the tantalizing suggestion that there is quite an archive of Dr. Seuss and Theodore Geisel drawings that exist that you are now going to kind of share and put out in the world for creators of all different backgrounds to come in and make new works inspired by some things that are left, so that I have the image of a very colorful spire tower that is just full of the archive of works. Tell me a little bit more about that project and about the archives that still are left, perhaps to look through for content. And I don't, the day that we're recording this podcast, every single motorcycle in Los Angeles is going down my street. I would just like to know.
That's hilarious.
It's a work from home Friday and all the motorcyclists are out.
I love it.
Tell us about the book, Seuss Book Initiative.
Well, I hate to burst your bubble on what the archives look like. You can keep your tower in your head. It's in a library. So when Ted died, Audrey Geisel, his widow, donated all of his notes and his sketches, everything to the UCSD library, which was renamed the Geisel Library. So it's a library. It's in the library. And as any artist is, TED wasn't linear, right? They don't start, middle, end, right? They're extremely creative. And so TED would just draw things, doodle. He had different folders, like things that say villains. And all these really interesting, all these really interesting little characters and sketches or places, just locations. So they were just ideas. And I think maybe, I mean, I didn't get the chance to meet TED Geisel. I feel like I know him, but I don't. I would imagine he was testing things on to see, is there a story here? Or I don't know, or just doodling. So while there's also at the library, all the original sketches for the books that are published, which let me just tell you, if you're a fan, is amazing. It's like you can see his thinking. Yeah. But then there's super cool. But then there's also just again, these sketches, and they're just beautiful characters. So there's characters, there's locations, there's crazy machines that just didn't go anywhere. They were just his. And so our thought was, I spent a lot of time at the archives. It helps me understand the man, mm-hmm. Which helps me mm-hmm. caretake, get us better. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so I saw these and I thought, we need to do something with this. And why not take these and allow these new and emerging voices to, you know, keep that legacy alive and let them take it and say, these images inspire a story? And so the thought is to let emerging artists take, you know, a sketch. It could be a character, it could be a place, it could be, a machine, and come up with their own story. And write a book, a beginner book for readers in their style, their prose, their artistic style, their characters, and tell a story. And then these books would also just have a quick aside, maybe the forward or the backwards. It would say their process, like why did they like the hummingbirds? Like did that inspire mm-hmm. this beautiful story? I just love the idea. It's also actually in keeping with what TED Geisel himself did. So TED started the division at Random House called Beginner Books, mm-hmm. and he was president.
That logo, again, one of those things that just is such a trademark of quality to parents for generations. It just utterly invaluable in terms of, again, what it speaks to about what that book is going to represent for that child.
You know, so many people to that end. So because when it was a beginner book, TED put his cat in the hat and the logo on it, right? This was part of the division of Random House, part of the, I can't remember the name of it for the books. But anyway, so that's why there's other authors that have that logo on there. So many times people say, oh, what do you do? You know, I work for Dr. Seuss. Oh my God, I love Dr. Seuss. I love Go Dog Go. And I always say, that's a great book. But it's a beginner book. You know, it's not a Dr. Seuss book. But it was in the same vein. So TED worked with emerging illustrators and authors at that time to help basically kind of teach them, how do you write a book that's appropriate for early readers? And we don't have to teach anyone, but the idea of giving a platform to new and emerging artists is certainly consistent with what Seuss is all about. Mm-hmm.
And so those will start as books and conceivably, you know, that's more ITP. Will they be branded some form of Dr. Seuss's .. or?
We'll use the name Seuss Studios. So just like you see beginner book logo on like Go Dog Go, you'll see a Seuss Studios logo on someone's book. But it's their book. They own the copyright. It's their book, right? It's just under our line of books. Imprint was the word I was trying to think of before. Imprint. This is not an imprint. This is a line of books. And I guess in the publishing business, there is a difference between the two. Uh-huh.
And I think I know the answer to this, but I am curious. Is Dr. Seuss always a kids and family brand? Is there a version of Dr. Seuss that could be more adult? I mean, I realize some of the movies have aimed, you know, a little broader audience, but is there something that could, you know, if you were to do a fully adult themed property, is that out of the realm of consideration?
No, I mean, maybe we've talked about it. Could we do, so for example, TED Geisel, these notes are in the library as well. He gave lectures on how to write children's books. That could be cool, right? Like maybe we do a book that teaches, you know, adults, like how do you write a children's book? Mm-hmm. We've toyed with books on art, taking those early sketches and, mm-hmm. you know, doing it in a book that's really, because they are beautiful. They're like pieces of art, doing that type of a book. So the answer is we've thought about it. I haven't found the right idea quite yet, but I think it's conceivable. Why not?
Now, don't run off with thing one or thing two.
Stick around to hear more from Dr. Seuss Enterprises CEO, Susan Brandt.
If your business needs a new application, then developers will have to write code, a lot of code. If an application needs to be modernized, then you'll need time, resources, and caffeine. If that sounds daunting, then you need Watson X Code Assistant, AI designed to multiply developer productivity so you can generate code quickly. Let's create a more modern foundation for business with Watson X Code Assistant. Learn more at ibm.com/codeassistant. IBM. Let's create.
Tired of restless nights? Meet Leesa, the sleep experts. Here at Leesa, we know that good sleep is essential for mental, physical, and emotional health. That's why their mattresses are made for exceptional comfort and support, catering to every sleep need. Check out Leesa's Sapira Hybrid Mattress, named Best Hybrid Mattress 5 years running. Sleep hot? The Chill Collection is built with cool-to-the-touch top fabric and layers of high-density comfort foams, all intended to remove excess body heat while maximizing comfort. With Leesa, getting a new mattress has never been easier. Delivery is free, and you have 100 nights to try out your mattress in the comfort of your home. Don't spend another night dreaming of better sleep. For a limited time, save up to $700 off select mattresses plus two free pillows. Go to leesa.com/iHeart for an additional $50 off mattresses and select goods. That's leesa.com/iHeart. Exclusions apply. See leesa.com for more details.
And we're back, just like the Sneetches on the Beaches, with more from Dr. Seuss Enterprises CEO, Susan Brandt.
Because it's such an interesting life and the legacy is there must have been inquiries about doing a more traditional Hollywood biopic of Theodore Geisel. Does that ever come across your desk? I know you have a background in film. You had previously worked for 20th Century Fox.
I did. I worked in the home entertainment division, though, so a little removed from the lot. We were the hanger-oners, you know, like.
Making the money, and back in those days.
We were making the money, yes. Well, I've always been a classic marketer, so I took that approach with home entertainment. And when I was there, it was actually VHS tapes. So it was back in the day. Of course, we've been approached. We had a partnership with Illumination Entertainment with Chris Meledandri, and Chris and I did spend a lot of time thinking about, could we do a biopic? How would we do it? And how would we make it special and unique? And just couldn't figure out the story, couldn't figure out the angle for the film. So just haven't quite figured that out yet.
But would you say it's something that is kind of still simmering somewhere in the idea stage, or?
DSC is not seriously considering it. Not right now. Mm-hmm. We've got three films that we're focused on right now. And we're very excited about. Those are the films that I alluded to with Warner, right? So you had mentioned John Chu, Hannah Magella, and Bad Robot with Oh, the Place You'll Go. We have two other films working also with Warner Animation Group. We have The Cat in the Hat, and we have The Thing movie. So right now, and as you alluded to as well, we've got a lot of content with Netflix. We're focused on those right now. We're not actively seeking another film right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it sounds like you've got a lot going on. Let me ask you, when you do a deal with Netflix, given given the IP that you bring to the table, do you own the underlying series? Does that become a property of Dr. Seuss Enterprises, or does that property lie with Netflix?
You're asking me to go back to that contract and think it through. Typically, and I'd have to go look at the Netflix deal, I don't remember. Typically, like when you do a film, the studio owns the copyright to the film. That's very normal. So I would imagine that we probably schedule or structured it that way. I honestly don't remember. But all these rights are outlined, you know, in your contract, what they can do, what you can do, who can utilize it, etc. I just don't know the underlying copyright. I would honestly imagine it's Netflix, because that's how we do our films. That's how most is. So for example, the Chuck Jones special, the TV special, that was originally MGM. They have the copyright. So that's usually how this is done. The copyright's held by the studio.
Oh, How the Grinch Stole Christmas?
Yeah. The Chuck Jones special. So I honestly don't know. I'd have to go back. I'd be surprised if it's not structured that way.
Can you give me an example of bringing that kind of IP, utterly, utterly unique, you know, IP that gives you leverage in deal making when you're talking about media or any kind of exploitation of those rights?
Well, you know, we're just fortunate that we come to the table with Dr. Seuss. So, you know, we can, and I'd like to think we're fair, but tough negotiators, you know, we're going to get, you know, a good above market deal, both in terms of the financials. Control is important to us. Any kind of ancillary, you know, rights, we'll negotiate. Mm-hmm. That gives you, you know, a bit of leverage without having, I can't really get into all the details, but it does allow you some leverage. That said, we are always motivated to do a fair deal for both parties. It doesn't make sense if you do a deal that really is one-sided. Either way, eventually one party is not happy. So we mm-hmm. really do try to be good partners. You know, we're going to fight hard for what we think is right. But at the end, it's got to be a fair deal for both. And when I say underlying copyright, that's to what's created. The, you know, obviously the characters that we come with, we keep. Those are ours. They're always ours. Nobody ever gets those. Yeah. But the new entity that's created is probably, you know, it's probably Netflix is a copyright. Like, again, I'd have to go look at the deal.
Mm-hmm. No, I think I can appreciate that distinction. And that's interesting, you know, obviously. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you for, mm-hmm. For candor there. And do you see, it's interesting because I would imagine, you know, I think you mentioned to me before as a statistic, something like one out of every four mm-hmm. family or child born mm-hmm. in the United States gets some form of Dr. Seuss book in their first year. If I'm repeating that,
as a first book. Yeah. As their first book, one in four gets a Dr. Seuss book as their first book.
Yeah. That is just, that is just a stunning level of reach. Those books, I'm sure that just there's a certain sales volume that there's just yes. always, but do you see when you have new TV or film content in the market, do you see an appreciable spike in the sales of those classic books? If the content yes. is tied to, you know, if the content is tied to it, or if there's just a moment where people are talking about Dr. Seuss again.
Mm-hmm. Certainly if we have a really exciting and successful, product, whether it's a film or it's television, you know, as we like to say, all boats rise. You know, it's not usually just whatever, you know, book this the entity may be based on. It's literally our portfolio rises, and that's books, and that could also be licensed products as well. So successful entertainment projects really help the entire portfolio.
Mm-hmm. And tell us a little bit about how the Dr. Seuss Enterprise is structured. I understand that it's basically the overarching entity that owns it is a foundation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we're definitely for profit. It's really interesting. People always think we're a non-for-profit, or they'll talk about us like we're the estate, which I think is interesting. I think that goes to the goodwill there is for the property. We do, first and foremost, we're about being good to children and being good to families. So everything we do, we use that barometer, is this good for kids? Yes. So I think that's where some of the beautiful halo, where people think we're a non-for-profit, but we're not. We're a for-profit organization. Since Audrey passed, we are owned by a foundation, but we are not the foundation. We simply are able to provide money to the foundation so that they can do good.
Uh-huh. Oh, that's awesome. That in and of itself has got to be awfully fulfilling.
That's lovely. It's lovely. Every bit of dollars that, you know, we pay our bills, but after that, you know, the money goes to a foundation, and they do good in the world. And that's a nice feeling.
Mm-hmm. What size of an operation do you have? You're based in San Diego.
We're in San Diego. You know, we never like to give absolute numbers. we're smaller than you think. And yet I always say, you know, there are hundreds, if not thousands, of people around the world that work on Seuss. And it's because we have a very unique way of working. We do have a core team that works in San Diego and Los Angeles. And actually, we have one in the Midwest right now. But we partner with a lot of licensing. We have a lot of agents. So we have licensing agencies that work with us in Europe, in Australia, in Latin America, in Asia. We also work with agencies that help us in the entertainment space and the publishing space. We work with ICMCAA. We work with a lot of different agencies that rep us, you know, in their various. We work with foreign publishing agencies, Curtis Brown. So we have a lot of people that are on our team that are helping sell and manage our relationships. So in that regard, we really do have hundreds, if not thousands. They're just not under direct payroll.
I chuckle thinking of the response that you must get when people ask you, what do you do? And you said, I'm the CEO of Dr. Seuss. That must be kind of a...
I'll tell you, I love my job. And I also love being able to tell people this is what I do. And people say, I love Dr. Seuss. And my response is always, I do too. You know, I love this body of work.
It's great when you can absolutely say that. Tell us, how did you get there? You've been there more than 20 years now.
Oh my gosh.
Quite a long time.
I like to say I joined when dinosaurs were still roaming the earth. yes. No, I've had the good fortune to work here since 1998. So for a long time, you know, a little bit of luck got me here. I was working in Los Angeles. I was working for 20th Century Fox Film Corporation in Home Entertainment International. And my then boyfriend, now husband, had an opportunity in San Diego. And he says, you know, would you move to San Diego with me? I said, yes, I will. And people said, oh my gosh, you're throwing your career away for a guy. I'm like, yeah, because it's the right guy. I threw said career away. I came down here and I read the newspaper that Dr. Seuss was doing a movie. And I wasn't working. I was going to just figure out what I was doing down here. And so I wrote to Dr. Seuss and I sent them a cover letter in rhyme, which, oh my God, I cringe now. And it's just the luck came from, I sent it to them. And the day that the head of the board, I sent it to him, received my resume, they were deciding at that day whether or not they were going to hire somebody to help them with licensing. And they were split. The board was split on this other woman. And they said, well, this resume just came. Let's talk to this. It was Susan O'Sullivan at the time. Let's talk to Susan O'Sullivan. And so I came in and I got the job. So I just happened to open the newspaper that day. I just happened to get the resume before they made the decision to hire this other woman. And I loved it so much. I stayed 24 years later. I'm still here.
Susan, you have to tell us at least one of the rhymes in that cover letter.
I don't even have it. All right, I will try to find it for you. So I don't have it here. I wish I kept it. You know, but I don't know. I thought it was clever at the time. Then I look back, I'm like, this is silly. And so I got rid of it. I'll find it.
I think a few generations of Variety reporters have had the fun. You can't do it all the time. You can't overdo it. But every so often, every couple of years, there comes a project or an opportunity where you can write a story in Seussian dialogue and rhyme. And you just do it with apologies to the master. But knowing that, you think about just the love of language and the playfulness that those books, that work inspires. It's true. I find it, again, as a writer, I just find it so awe-inspiring to step back and think about what it stands for and what it means. And so I think, I know that he would appreciate that it resonated that long and that people care so much. It's really, it's exciting. Yep.
Audrey, his wife this past used to think Ted would be tickled. She used to always say, Ted would be tickled that we're still talking about him and his works. And I love to think that he'd still be tickled that people care still. We do.
Susan, let me ask you to take another step back and tell me, in your path into marketing and into business, what was it? What was it in your, early career or background? What was it that put you on the path to get you to where you are today? What made you get into this, into the industry, the entertainment industry?
Absolutely. Well, I always wanted to work in business. Even as a child, I played office, which is funny. I made my brother be my secretary. But I also vowed when I had the opportunity to do so, that I would only work on a product or with a company that I truly cared about. So I really wasn't interested in working, working for, and there's nothing wrong with it, but I wasn't interested in working with like a Procter & Gamble and soaps or things like that. Just not interested. I don't care. So I only wanted something I was passionate about so that I could spend the amount of time learning and, being excited. So what did that mean? I worked in the wine business. I worked for Ernest and Julio Gallo. I actually worked for them. I was in meetings with them. I mean, how stinking cool is that? Yeah. I worked in the luxury resort business and I got to work in the film business so that when the opportunity to work with Dr. Seuss came, that was another love. So I got to work in that business as well. So it was really picking companies or products that I found incredibly engaging and interesting and saying, yeah, I'll do that. And that's what I did.
Thanks for listening. Be sure to leave us a review at Apple Podcasts. We love to hear from listeners. And please go to Variety.com and click on newsletters to subscribe to our free Strictly Business newsletter. As always, tune in next week for another episode of Strictly Business.
Mm-hmm. Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
Are you still searching for your perfect place to call home? Well, now is the time to buy at Fisher Homes. If you're looking to move in before the end of 2024, May could be your last opportunity to start building your dream home and close before the year's end. If you're hoping to move in even sooner, Fisher Homes also has homes that are move-in ready and waiting for you, where you can start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with a new home advisor today at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home.